Greetings and good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is January 25, 2019, a beautiful sunny Friday afternoon here in Nashville. Although it has been a little cold, the sunshine is very welcome after a couple weeks of rain and clouds. The state of Tennessee operates 56 designated parks, state parks, and there are numerous additional areas that are called natural areas or historic areas or archaeological areas, all managed by the state. Visitors to these sites always want a map to show them where they are and what to expect when they visit, the location of trails, the parking areas, the restrooms, etc. And the parks range in size from 20 to 30 acres all the way up to 20,000 acres or more. The production of these maps has historically been a real headache for the state park system and its management. For one thing, as time goes by, the boundaries of the parks shift as the state acquires new land. New facilities are developed, which need to be shown on the map. New trails are made. New natural features are discovered, which need to be reflected on a map. The task of keeping up with this in an organized way over 56 separate parks is daunting and expensive. You also want to have, from a graphics standpoint, a unified-looking map product that you can be proud of. Then there is the question of knowing how many to print to keep up with user demand. And maps are also important for park managers to keep track of location of rare and endangered plants, animals, exotic plants, and sensitive areas in need of special protection. As managers of the parks retire or move to new areas, we don't want to be required to start from scratch on what we know about each park. And so today I sit down with Sunny Fleming, who is the Geographic Information Systems Coordinator for the Division of State Parks. Sunny and I talk today about the management of geographic information generally, but also about two special projects involving mapping and the state park system, and how using modern technology and adding some real value to the visitor experience and management of our state parks. And so I hope you will enjoy my interview with Sunny Fleming. Sunny Fleming, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
All right, thank you for having me.
It's terrific to have you out here on this beautiful winter day here in Nashville.
Yes, absolutely. Finally some sunshine. It's a little cold, but we'll get through it.
Sunny, I have not met you personally until today, but I've been observing your work activity as you can on Facebook. I'm a Facebook snoop. And I know that you're involved in geographic information systems for the state park system.
Yes, sir.
Terrific, interesting job that you do.
It's the best.
I want to talk about a couple particular projects that you're doing, which I think are fascinating. But before we do that, tell the audience a little bit about yourself and where you're from and your background.
Sure. So I was born and raised in Nashville, actually just south of here in Franklin, Tennessee. And my mother's side of the family has been in Tennessee for a very long time. And
in Middle Tennessee?
Not in Middle Tennessee,
okay.
In Sweetwater area. So
okay.
Sweetwater and 10 Mile. It's halfway
Southeast Tennessee, sure.
Yeah, halfway between Chattanooga and Knoxville.
Right.
That's the Sharp family. And through history, just kind of like genealogical history and all sorts of things, I've kind of come circuitously to ecology and GIS and mapping. It all comes together.
Okay.
And my college career began at Austin P, actually. And you interviewed in a previous podcast my major professor there, Duane Estes.
Duane Estes, wonderful person.
Yes.
Yeah.
So from there...
So you've got a botany and field biology background.
Yeah. I actually started at Austin P as an art student.
Oh, my.
And then I just one day, I think Duane actually caught me snooping around the greenhouse. And he asked me if I was interested in botany. And I said, okay. I didn't really know what that meant. And he had scrawled my name on his whiteboard, I need to get in touch with that student. And about a year later, I came back to him and I said, I'm going to give up my art scholarship and switch to biology. And I immediately failed all of my first semester classes as a biology student and thought that I was going to be terrible. And he just really encouraged me, and he found an internship at Arnold Air Force Base as a biology intern. And that took me over to that part of Tennessee. And from there, I ended up actually at UTC, but I was still working on some projects with Duane. And, you know, we've just been friends ever since. And yeah.
Well, fantastic. Growing up, what experiences did you have that might have led you into that?
Yeah. Idea? So, like I said, I didn't know that this was where I wanted to go at first. And it just kind of came about naturally, pardon the pun.
Yeah.
And I think it was because I grew up in a very wooded area of Tennessee. It's kind of in the knobs of the outer central basin. And so I had a lot of woods to play in. It was really my escape. If my parents would punish me by, you know, making me stay indoors, right? When most of my peers would be playing video games and things like that, I just never had an interest in it. So it was always a peripheral thing for me. It was a place of escape and sanctuary.
Fantastic.
And, yeah.
Fantastic. So when did you start working for state parks?
I started working for state parks in 2013.
Okay.
And I actually started with Division of Natural Areas at that point.
Okay.
And I was part-time and helping them do some of their rare species monitoring. And then had the opportunity for this full-time job as the GIS specialist a couple years later.
All right, well, let's get in and talk about that a little bit. GIS, Geographic Information Systems.
You got it.
Tell us a little more about what that really means.
Huh, well, what's in a name, right?
Right.
So it's geographic information. And the system, though, is really, that can probably refer to a lot of things, I think. So a system of course, information, a system of software, but also systems as in ecological systems or other systems. I think a lot of people probably see it mostly as the map making byproduct.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it is. But it's
really,
record keeping.
Right,
and that's
right.
Really the key aspect is the records and
right,
the data.
Right. You know, when I was working in parks and conservation, we were just then coming into the computer age.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, literally the only computers that we had access to were mainframe computers. No, there were no laptops.
Right.
You know, and then the only laptops that we did have even before I left were for just word processing.
Yeah.
So, but today it's a whole different situation.
Whole different ball game.
Right. So. Just as a way of getting the audience interested in knowing what you're doing, I know that you're working on two particular projects. One has to do with the actual maps of the parks.
Yeah.
All right.
And
I remember this was always a challenge to keep good maps of the parks. The visitors would want them.
Yes.
They're expensive to publish.
Yes.
And you don't want them to look ratty. You want them to look like something.
Right.
So what are you doing?
Wow. It's been an interesting journey with that. I actually came into, you know, let's just call it the standardization of these maps.
Okay.
I kind of came into it as we had started going down that rabbit hole, which was a good thing. And then I got to adopt the project. As you mentioned, you know, this is not historically unprecedented
right.
necessarily.
Right.
And our state parks, each park has a friends group. And our friends groups are hugely supportive, and they have always kind of filled the niche for us, right? They would volunteer to make the maps for the park, and there's been some centralized efforts to do it, but it's never really come together into this full project. And we finally have been able to do that with the help of a volunteer, Monty Lamb, who has cloudhiking.net, and he's an excellent cartographer, and he's retired, and he does this, and he's taught himself the software. And so his collaboration with us has produced 56 standardized state park maps. And when I mean standardized, I mean we kind of use the same style of icons across all of them. They all have the same color scheme.
Typeface, that
yeah,
sort of stuff, right.
When you look at that map, you know that is a state parks map, and you will see that same style across our entire state system. And it's been a long journey, and it's revealed a lot of things about how we collect data and how we manage information and why it matters, because these are, this is a very public facing product. And
absolutely, the probably the most public facing.
It's one of our most public facing products, absolutely.
I mean, the you all have millions of visitors to your parks each year.
And that's increasing.
Right. And you know, visitors rely on those maps to get around. Where am I? What is there to do in the park, etc.
Yes.
And so computers and internet and those sorts of modalities offer opportunities for visitors as well.
Yes.
And so you've got a thing called Avenza Maps.
Right.
All right. So let me, Avenza, A-V-E-N-Z-A.
Yes. And that's a third-party software, actually, but we're taking advantage of it.
Okay.
So you can download it to your smartphone. It's an application.
All right.
And
so you go to the iTunes App Store.
Yep.
And you search for Avenza Maps.
Yep.
All right.
Exactly.
Then what do you do?
All right. So once you have the application downloaded, we publish our park maps to what's called their store. And it is a store. So we sell these digital maps for 99 cents.
Right.
And of course, that cost is split between the third party applicant and ourselves. Okay. So we don't see all of that, but that does go to a fund. And that's a small fund. It's for us to keep up our GIS, basically.
Okay.
And the beauty of this map is that it takes advantage of the technology of your phone. So there's a GPS on your phone that's
global positioning satellite feature.
Yes, okay, so, absolutely.
All right. You have to have that function turned on, though.
You do.
Right, because sometimes you might not have it turned on for privacy purposes.
Yeah,
right.
So in your settings, you would need to enable your location settings for this app.
All right.
And it works independently of your cell phone coverage, right? So if you're in a park that doesn't have very good cell service, which most of ours don't, you can still see where you're at on the map because of your GPS. So.
All right. So let's go through that again, because my wife and I tried this out this past weekend at Radnor Lake.
Was it successful?
Oh, it worked seamlessly.
Oh, that's so exciting.
So we, you know, when we were here at the house, mm-hmm. we got on the Avenza website and bought a map of Radnor Lake State Park, 99 cents, big deal. So when we were at Radnor Lake, as you say, you do not have ordinarily cell service at Radnor Lake. I'm on AT&T cell. My wife is on another service, and she does get service in the mm-hmm. park for some reason or another, but I do not.
Yeah.
So we were able to open up the map, so you don't have to be online, so to speak, or in a network or anything like that to open up the map, because it's resident on your phone.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And as we walked around the park, the little blue dot on the map followed us around.
I love it. I love it when things in theory actually work in practice.
Right. And so the park map itself is not just featureless. In other words, it's just not the boundaries.
Right.
So tell us what the features are on the park maps ordinarily.
So ordinarily, of course, we want kind of your basic topography. So you have an idea of what you're getting yourself into. We have the trails, we have roads, but we also have, you know, the things, your amenities. What are you going to see there? And that's, you know, at Radnor, of course, we've got the visitor center and the nature center. So those items will be on the map. But also, you know, on some of our other parks that will have overlooks or waterfalls, items that our guests go to a lot of times, we'll put those on the map as well.
So you can tell by the lines on the map how steep the terrain is.
Yes.
All right. Are the maps usually identified in terms of elevation? Or is there usually an elevation number?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So we treat these contours just like you might on a standard USGS map.
Okay.
And depending on the scale, not all of the maps are going to be at the same scale. And so some may be at 20-foot contours, which means 20 feet between the first reference elevation and the second reference elevation.
Right.
So it does differ park to park. But yeah.
I guess it's one thing to do a map of a 20,000 acre park like Fall Creek.
Yes.
And be able to accommodate the parameters of your iPhone or whatever.
Yeah.
Versus 700 acres or 900 acres at Radnor Lake.
Yeah. And right. You bring up a good point, right? So we had to put out our 56 park maps, and we had to make them. We had to have one for each park. And we focused first and foremost, actually, on the print version. And so the ones that you can download on the phone, they're great and they're working. But I think ideally there would be two different products for each park, one okay. for print and one for the phone.
Okay.
Because, you know, insets, things like that might actually get in the way of where you might be walking. And so it's really interesting stuff. We've learned a lot in this project.
Well, one of the cool features of this product as well, as you are meandering in the park, if you're on a trail or wherever you are, you can take a picture with your phone.
Yes.
And the application will put a little dot there on the map, which you call a pin on the map.
Yeah.
Would be a better way to put it, to demarcate that location where you took the picture.
Yes.
And then after your experience in the park for a couple hours, you can go back.
You can make your own map.
And say, okay, I took a picture of this particular flower.
Yeah.
And it was at that latitude and longitude.
Yes.
All right.
So, absolutely.
All right.
And it's funny because before we started building out a little more streamlined aspects of this, we were using Avinza Maps and that particular feature to get data collected from our rangers. Because they love it. It's so easy.
Tell me more what you mean by that. What kind of data would you be collecting from your rangers?
Oh, gosh. So things that, you know, you probably won't see on a map, like recycle bins. And, you know, so some of those physical assets that okay. we're interested in from an asset management standpoint,
okay.
but that we would probably never put on a public map, right?
Right.
And so that's the kind of stuff that we ask from our rangers all the time. Like, hey, can you send me the information for this or the location for that?
Go out and take a picture of?
Yeah, take a picture of, put a pin down. You can export it out and email it. And that's a great feature for them because...
Fantastic.
Back in the day, you would have to take your GPS. You would have to, you know, take that point, bring it back to the office, plug it into your computer, export it, save the file, email it, you know. And we already ask our rangers to do so much. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, we used to have to go out there with actual physical maps.
And mark it.
And actually estimate, is this where we are?
right, yeah.
Because we had no ability to know
yes.
exactly the latitude and longitude. Well, it's a fantastic development. So friends, if you are traveling to a Tennessee state park, be sure to in advance of your trip,
yes,
download this application, Avinza yep. Maps,
yes,
and get the map of the park you're going to. It'll make your experience at the park much, much more better.
It really does.
Yeah.
It's so fun, and it I think it empowers people to explore areas more. You know?
So related to this is the constant struggle that State Parks has to actually know what the resources are that they are trying to manage.
Right.
Tell us more.
So this is really my pulpit, you know?
Go for it.
We have an excellent and rich and long history at our state parks. And a lot of that knowledge is institutional knowledge that our managers carry with them and that some of our longer standing rangers have in their heads. But we lose that knowledge when we have this turnover. And so collecting data is my big pulpit. We got to collect data. We've got to get this information. And there's two aspects to this. There's kind of the boring asset management side of it, like the recycle bins and things. But then there's a side of it that speaks to me from an ecological level and a biological level. And that's including an inventory of our biological resources there. And I believe the project you're referring to is the iNaturalist project.
Yeah, I want to hear about that.
Yes. It is not just me. I want to say that first. This right. was something I've been interested in But it was really prompted when a ranger approached me and said, how do we do this? And so that I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. You know, we're going to set it up and do it. So it's been a grassroots effort at the park, driven by some of our rangers and myself.
So it involves the professional staff at the park using this tool.
Yes, hopefully.
But then hopefully citizen scientists.
Yes.
Who are trying to cooperate.
Absolutely.
All right. So how, if a person is involved in nature study, you know, on a recreational basis.
Yes.
How can they participate in this? Tell us about it.
So the beauty of this is that I think people are already participating and they may not even know it. They just need to take an additional step to really participate.
All right.
And what I mean by that is, how many times do we take our silly smartphones out there and we see some crazy mushroom and we take a photo of it and we post it on Facebook, right?
Right.
We do this all the time and we have no idea what it is.
Or a particular bird that you've not seen before.
All sorts of stuff.
Right.
So this project with iNaturalist is another app that can be downloaded.
Right.
And you can just
upload. And it's free.
And it's free.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can upload your photo to iNaturalist. And it's just like social media. So instead of posting it to Facebook, you're really posting it to a bunch of biologists and other amateurs. And then everyone can kind of ID it and come to an agreement, right? That's what this is. And so we started this project actually, it's the 2019 BioBlitz, and it started on January 1st, and it's going to go to December 31st of 2019. And just in the few weeks it's been open, we've already got 260 observations as of a couple hours ago. And that's in winter.
Gotcha.
So this is very powerful stuff.
So you're encouraging citizens who visit the parks to take pictures of what they see at the park.
Oh, yes.
Particularly if it's a unique feature.
Absolutely.
And post it to iNaturalist. Now, how will iNaturalist know to use it with your project?
Ha, so this is where the GIS comes in.
All right, okay.
So since we have the park boundaries, you know, as our shape files for the maps,
okay.
I used those and uploaded them to iNaturalist.
Okay.
And so that creates what's called a geofence. And a geofence is really just an area, right? So maybe a neighborhood or a parcel, but these are our parks. And it recognizes the metadata from the photo, again, from your location services, from your GPS.
All right.
So it'll say, oh, this...
It'll recognize the longitude and latitude.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and the time, right?
All
so
right.
We're doing this within a year. So if you post it outside of that year, you're okay. not going to get included in our BioBlitz.
Okay, all right. Has your BioBlitz so far, and you said you have 200 observations, has it revealed anything fascinating or interesting? Or
you know, in winter it's a little bit slow, so people are seeing a lot of from a plant side of things, you're seeing a lot of the evergreen ferns and evergreen trees and items like that, a lot of deer. So far we haven't had any big surprises yet, but
okay.
we've had a really wet winter.
Okay.
And so we've seen a lot of cool mushrooms so far, which I know almost nothing about, but they're fascinating.
Are you interested in people taking pictures of cultural features as well?
So iNaturalist does not recognize cultural features.
Okay, all
right. We are definitely interested in that, but I think we're going to have to come up with another solution.
Another way to do that.
Yep.
Well, that's a whole different dimension, though, isn't it?
It really is, yeah.
Because parks is loaded with old buildings and historical types of features.
Preserve and protect in perpetuity.
That's right. So that is really fascinating. So we have two different projects that you're doing.
Yes.
And that the citizens can and should get involved in. So
yes.
First is the park maps, but then the iNaturalist.
Yes.
And you're calling it a BioBlitz.
Blitz. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Which is not my term. I did not coin that. So.
Well, whoever did it, that's kind of a clever term.
It really is.
Let's hope that people can get out there and use those phones and post it. It doesn't cost you anything.
It doesn't cost anything at all. And, you know, I think, too, I started thinking about using this platform because kids who are out in our parks, their parents are always struggling to get them to pay attention. And I think that instead of kind of pushing against some of this technology, let's embrace it
sure
and
enough.
Focus that use. And it's been successful with kids.
You know, not everything that you see on the landscape as you go around a park is a positive feature.
Right.
So walking around Radnor, you might see privet hedge.
Yes.
Or something of that nature. Are you interested in people posting that sort of thing?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think it's very valuable to actually know where we're seeing higher concentrations of invasive species.
Right.
And that's where, you know, if this really takes off, we might actually be able to utilize some of this information, not only for protecting resources, but managing
some of the invasives. Where do we need to focus a little attention? Exactly.
Data-driven decision-making.
Right. All right. So those are the two projects that you've got that are really on the front burner.
Yes.
but I know that Geographic Information Systems is about... You're doing more than that.
Oh, yes.
So tell us more. What else is going on?
Oh, wow. So that's, we've got a lot going on.
All right.
But one of the big initiatives that we're pushing for 2019 and beyond is, it's got a kind of a silly name, but we're calling it Smart Parks. And what we're looking to do is create better platforms for data collection for our rangers. And this really comes from two major needs. And the first need, and all the rangers laugh when I say this because they're so sick of me saying it, but it's reduce redundant inquiries from central office, right? Okay. So here we are in our Crystal Palace, right, downtown, and right. We always ask these rangers for information, and we ask them to do a lot. They are commissioned officers, right. But we also expect them to work with the public and to be biologists and to clean the bathrooms. I mean, they are more than just commissioned officers. And it kills me to have to ask them a question that maybe someone on the 10th floor has already asked them.
Right.
And my goal in my career, not just this year, is to make that easier across state government.
Gotcha.
We need to all be on the same page. And so we're using GIS
to share information around.
Absolutely.
Okay. You know, one of the things you and I talked about a little bit before we got on the air was the whole boundary issue of the state parks. Now, historically, many of our early parks started when the federal government granted a particular piece of property to the state of Tennessee.
Yeah.
And, you know, the land surveys that were done of Fall Creek and Standing Stone and
yes.
Some of these properties were grossly accurate, but not really very accurate.
Right.
And are we doing anything to update the actual boundary maps of the parks?
Yes, absolutely. So we are currently going through all of our deed records, and we are looking at the actual meets and bounds, and we are typing them in, and... So we're doing that, but we also are getting a surveyor out there, you know, on a case-by-case basis.
To verify the particular thing.
To verify things.
Right.
And it's a really interesting project. It's extremely tedious, and it's going to take a long time. But we've definitely improved our park boundaries, and in some of our parks, you know, we focus on a park before we move on to another one. So we've gotten through maybe... 5 of 56.
So are you working on the big parks first, or what?
No, not really. Okay. We started going alphabetically.
Okay.
You know, we kind of started there, but then through the map making process for the GeoPDFs, we realized that this park needs a lot of attention, and so
okay.
Then we focused there. So it's just been really piecemeal in that way.
So as, you know, the state's always acquiring new properties.
Yes.
And incorporating new property into the mapping programs is another aspect. Huh?
We've streamlined this process a little bit. And what I mean by that is now we get CAD data, which is digital, and it's very accurate. Mm-hmm. And so...
Computer-aided drafting data.
Yeah, something to do with engineers.
Okay.
Silly folk.
Okay.
Yeah, but I can consume that same data in my GIS. And so we're adding those boundaries in. And so I would say anything in the past 7 10, even 12 years is going to be much more accurate. But of course, the further back you go in time, the less accurate those boundaries are and the more difficult they are to hunt down.
Yeah, you would think that when the state would acquire something now, there'd be a survey done before the acquisition was made.
Yes.
And today, those surveys are done electronically.
Yeah, we get the CAD and we pull that in.
Right.
And we've got it set up. So we actually serve our boundaries online to the public. We serve our boundaries right now and our trails. So if you use GIS, you can pull those into your software. And we've got it down so that every Wednesday, that data set gets updated.
So, wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like you're using mainframe technology to do.
Yeah, we've definitely had our IT group involved with scripting that over and pushing those updates from our database to kind of the larger state database than to the...
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
It was a process. So.
Well, Sonny, this is fascinating. Anything else that's on the horizon as far as the GIS program is concerned? I know that MTSU... one of my guests in the past was Zeta Law.
Oh, I love Zeta.
Yeah. And I know that she handles that program up there at MTSU.
It's
kind of a statewide coordinator of GIS programs.
Yeah.
Is State Parks participating in that or?
Oh, man, that's a loaded question. Okay. We've definitely spoken to some universities in the past, and I think our program at the time was too young to really understand what role we could play and we were also maybe too young for the universities to kind of understand what role we could play, but we've definitely entertained the idea of involving them somehow either in data collection or other projects, but we're still exploring it and we're going to see where it goes.
Well, Sonny, it's been a terrific pleasure to have you as a guest today.
Thank you very much.
Wish you the best of luck with what you're doing, and maybe you'll come back and give us an update on how things are going.
Oh, I would love to. I'll talk all day.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.